Thank you for your support. I would now like to welcome our great board member, passionate advocate for free speech, many of you probably already know him, for the brilliantly talented TV writer and producer, Tom Fontana.
Thank you. Thanks. I actually know somebody here, isn't that great? Censorship is a little bit like the rain outside. It touches all of us, and it touches us in different ways. There's a woman in DeKalb, Georgia, who was recently fined $100 for having a bumper sticker that said, I think it said something like, "Stop the Bushit," B-U-S-H-I-T. She was fined and arrested for that. We also this weekend had Sumner Redstone, who none of us would actually consider a left-winger, condemning the FCC for its the fear it has brought to Viacom and CBS, both in the news and in entertainment. I myself have been touched by censorship several times. Most recently, I did a series for the recently dead WB network, in which the series that I did, which was about a college seminar about human behavior and sexuality, the Thursday before the Wednesday we were to premiere, I got a call from the president of the network to tell me that all the episodes that we had done, which the network had accepted, had to be all recut, and that he wanted me to recut them all, and I refused. And it was the first time in my career that I ever had a television show go on the air in which I had not seen the episodes before anybody else had. So that brings us to Joe, who was a man with an idea and a man with a career, and with his journalistic instincts decided that he wanted to write about something he thought was important, and he wanted to write about it in his own way. His company, Reuters, decided that wasn't acceptable and fired him. So, Joe, I'm hoping that your second book will be about the stupidity of Reuters and call it Brainless 2. And with that, I'd like to give you Joe McGuire.
Thanks a lot. I'm going to sit here, if that's okay with you all. It will become immediately apparent that I don't have a speech planned. I don't have any note cards, but I figured if I could write a book about Ann Coulter in 5 weeks, clearly I could bullshit for half an hour. But before I regale you with the tale of the book, I do want to say thanks to my friend Lynn Grady, who's in the back there. Thanks for dressing up, Lynn. Who was wise enough to know that the world was ready for a book about Ann Coulter. So with that short introduction, it really was just a sort of spur-of-the-moment idea. As usual, as with most good ideas, it happened in a bar after a softball game. I'm sure Lynn will be embarrassed that I'm telling this story, but Lynn's the catcher on the softball team, and I play third base, and at about 1 or 2 a.m. on a bar on Amsterdam Avenue, in mid-June, if only to keep Lynn quiet so I could hear the jukebox better, I pitched her a book idea because she had been on her journalist friends for months and months about, oh, you pitch me an idea, then we'll talk about it from there. And I said, someone should write a book about Ann Coulter. And Lynn said, no, you should write a book about Ann Coulter. And I thought, okay, fine. And when she called me the next day to say, you have an editorial meeting at HarperCollins on Monday, I thought she was joking and then decided to show up anyway, and there actually was a meeting. So, that was in, as I said, mid-June, so there really was a very aggressive deadline here, obviously, with the midterm elections coming up, there was some time sensitivity there. And I didn't find out until later that how precarious or how tenuous my the deal was. about a month and a half later, I told Lynn that I don't know how to type. I've been a journalist for 15 years. I have no idea how to type. And she said if she had known that, she actually wouldn't have pushed the deal through. She was joking, I think. But in any regard, I sat in my unair-conditioned apartment for a few weeks through the heat wave this summer and plowed through the Ann Coulter books first to do my research, as every good journalist would do. Somebody actually described reading four Ann Coulter books as a stunt worthy of the Jackass movies. But I assure you, it's far more painful than anything those guys do. You know, stapling your elbow to a 2x4 seems like a walk in the park, compared with reading Slander or Godless or any of the other screeds that Ann has come up with. But that said, it actually was a lot of fun. I learned a lot about myself in doing it, just how much deadline pressure means to me. I've worked for newswires for a long time now, and I see there are 6 or 8 people in the back who have done the same. And they'll tell you, when your deadline is 5 minutes ago, you write like crazy. And, you know, when your deadline is 6 or 8 months from now, maybe you don't. So pressure, yeah, but good pressure. And I had a lot of fun doing it. So in going through Ann Coulter's books, of course, seeing through the infuriating arguments and everything else, what I really decided to do was make this a journalistic exercise. Yes, it's jokey and opinionated, and it's called Brainless, for Pete's sake. I mean, you know, not exactly the most high-minded title in the world, but if you understand that it's a play on her most recent book, that gets you somewhere. But so what I did was really deconstruct her arguments and look at their component parts and try to figure out how she lies. And she really does, but as was just pointed out, I will defend her right to lie. I tend to be somewhat of an absolutist when it comes to the First Amendment, and I really will defend her right to say anything she wants. But I will also defend my right, and in fact consider it my civic duty, to stand up and say, you're lying. And not enough of us do that, and that sounds a little preachy, and it's not meant to be, because I don't do it enough either. And this was one case where I thought, okay, somebody needs to stand up and do it. It turns out that two other books are out at the same time doing that very thing, but competition is good and healthy. So in going through her books, I really did find out that the lies run the gamut from the very simple to the very complex. On the simple end, for example, she lies about her age. Hardly a federal crime. I've turned 28 11 times now. It's really not a big deal. But when you put it in the context of her litany of lies, you really can see that It's the truth is so, it's not even there in most cases. At the other end of the spectrum, one of the long passages in Godless is about the public education system in this country. Now, if you don't know, Ann Coulter went to public high school in New Canaan, Connecticut, probably one of the best public high schools in the country. She has an Ivy League education. She went to the University of Michigan Law School. Clearly is not brainless. She in fact is highly intelligent. To say that she uses less than the full capacity of her brain, I think, is a fair statement. So anyway, in Godless, she's talking about how effectively every public school teacher in this country is a pedophile, and you need to know this. And she goes on to cite this study and comes up with a number that 1 in 10 school kids in this country has been abused sexually at the hands of a teacher or educator. Now, I went to public school, and I know that empirically to not be true, but what I needed to do was prove it. So using her numbers and her source material, I basically broke down the numbers and did her math for her. I guess she must have been an English major or history major in college. And showed that she's actually off by a factor of 1,000. Now, but, you know, ballpark. I mean, it's true. She was off by a factor of 1,000. Now, all that does to me is confuse the issue to the degree that if there is a problem of sexual abuse in schools in this country, and if it's something that we need to deal with, and it very well may be, I don't know, you shouldn't have to lie about it. You shouldn't have to inflate your numbers. If the truth is there, speak the truth, and everyone will see it for what it is. Again, easier said than done when you see people get swift-boated and other things. But the point is, if there is a larger truth, show me the evidence. Don't lie to me. Don't make up numbers. And what really gets me as a journalist, because the sourcing and attribution is important to me, don't use the sort of smoke and mirrors attribution and footnoting and endnoting that Ann Coulter does. Excuse me. She will proudly say, with regard to slander, for example, one of her recent books, that there are 780 endnotes in the back. By my estimation, about 4 of them mean something. I mean, it's just really is ridiculous. I'm exaggerating, of course, but it's to me to claim some sort of authority and to back it up with this sort of faulty and false attribution is really disturbs me as a journalist. And you know, she'll say that she's one of the, she claims she's one of the least published writers in the country. And she has 4 books on the bestseller list. She's syndicated in 100 newspapers. I mean, if that doesn't make every struggling writer, you know, throw up in his mouth a little bit, I don't know what does. But it's just the absurdity of it all was what kept me going through the heat wave and the not being able to type and the daily phone calls from Lynn playing both good cop and bad cop alternately. Incidentally, she's staring daggers at me right now. But it got me. But it got me through. And as I said, it was a lot of fun in the end. What I didn't expect was to wake up jobless last week. I had received conditional approval from Reuters to write the book. I thought I had met the conditions to do it, and they thought otherwise. And the next thing you know, I had plenty of time to do 15 minutes of radio out in Salt Lake City or wherever. I'll spare you most of the ugly details, but in short, Reuters didn't like they didn't like the title. They didn't like I assume they didn't like the tone of the book, and they thought that it didn't meet what they call the Reuters Trust Principles, which govern your objectivity and fairness as a Reuters journalist. What they don't govern is your personal behavior. One of the conditions I agreed to when I wrote Brainless was that I would not associate the Reuters name with it. And in fact, if you read the author bio in the back, it tells you that I'm a journalist. I have worked at the Wall Street Journal Online and Bloomberg News. Now, look, I'll never confuse myself with Bob Woodward or Frank Rich or anybody like that. But when Bob Woodward writes a book, the Washington Post is more than happy to have its name on that book, no matter how slanted or opinionated it may be. The same goes for The Times with Frank Rich and any other number of people. I didn't expect Reuters to throw me a party or to help me publicize this book in any way. I also didn't expect them to tell me to go find another job. And so it was slightly disturbing. Now, perversely, of course, this is the best thing that ever happened to the book, because as soon as the story hit the New York Times and was picked up by liberal blogs around the country, as I was just telling someone before, I watched sales on Amazon.com. Because I don't have a job, so I sit around and look at the internet all day. So I literally watched as it went from number 5,000 to 2,500 to 500 to in the top 100. And You know, that is the power of the internet working right there, and the power of information. And if you didn't believe it before, believe it now. I didn't even know what to do except call everyone I knew and say, this is unbelievable. You have to go on Amazon right now, which I encourage you all to do, by the way. The disagreement I had with Reuters has turned into really a First Amendment issue. If their corporate code of conduct is meant to govern what I do in my personal life, then we have a real problem. Frankly, I don't think that handing out Vote John Kerry leaflets on a street corner is in violation of the Reuters trust principles. How could it possibly be? Voting and then telling someone how I vote couldn't possibly be in violation of the trust principles. Writing a book about a polarizing figure and getting to the truth in what was ultimately a journalistic exercise, but a personal one, I don't see how that is in violation of the Reuters trust principles. They disagree. Again, here I am speaking with you, and that afforded me the opportunity to do so. I don't really know what more to say about Ann Coulter herself. Again, as a journalist, of course, we have to do our due diligence, and I did try to contact her. I was lucky enough to get her email address. She didn't respond. I tried to get her through a publicist. She didn't respond. And no word from her camp yet, incidentally. But though I do see that there's a chair here reserved for her. Very nice. So who knows? Maybe she's in a cab. I don't know. She is an extremely polarizing figure, and I can, on some level, understand why Reuters wouldn't have wanted the Reuters name associated with that, and so that's why I agreed to that condition. Many of you also probably know that recently at Reuters, and I see some friends from there, by the way, was also caught up in a fake photo scandal recently. Now, how much of that came into play, I don't know. You'd have to check with them. But I can certainly imagine that it was on people's minds there and on some of the management when they said, well, maybe this is something we don't want to do right now. You should also know that I was a financial markets editor. How my views of Ann Coulter would affect how I cover the government bond market is a mystery to me and should be to you as well. The bond market is a mystery to everyone anyway, but it's true. I don't see how that could possibly have affected my coverage or given anyone the idea that in some way now our bond market coverage would be slanted. It just doesn't make any sense to me, but a lot of things haven't made sense for a couple of weeks now. In any event, financial journalism is a very insular community, so everyone who needs to know that I'm looking for a job probably already knows. I'm not. I'm actually getting used to sitting around being a man of leisure, which is the nice way of saying shiftless layabout, of course. It's sort of fun, and of course now I have to come up with another idea, and Lynn and I will just have to go into the bar after the softball game and come up with one. So I'm willing to take questions about anything, the book, Ann Coulter, the firing, everything.
I guess I'm going to ask the first question if that's okay. But how are you actually, were you actually fired? Were you actually told, you know, to leave today? Or how did it happen? And then we'll take questions from the audience.
Again, sparing you some of the ugly details, yes, I was called into a meeting at which I gave a galley copy of the book to one of the regional managers. I encouraged her to read it instead of making her judgment beforehand. I was called into a meeting the next day and told that that would be my last meeting there. So yes, I was unceremoniously dismissed. They were kind enough to let me walk out under my own volition rather than have some guards manacle me or something. It was literally overnight. Yep.
The question is, does Ann Coulter matter? Why do we need a world to counter Ann
Yeah, you know, that was one of the things I struggled with a little bit was why should I do this if she is merely someone we should ignore? Well, writing a whole book about her is really kind of counterintuitive. But on the other hand, she does matter simply because she gives voice to some of the bigotry and hatred that people on the right can't literally give voice to themselves. I mean, let's face it, if you are running for office, you're running for Congress, you know, in a red state somewhere, you can't make outright racist comments or classist comments or whatever and have any shot to be elected. You want the people who believe those things to vote for you, certainly, so they let Ann Coulter do it for them. So I really did think it was time that somebody said, she is lying, and I'm going to say it. And hopefully you laugh a little bit along the way, too. So I thought it would be fun.
Joe, can you repeat the question?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sure. Mm-hmm. By the door? Yeah.
Yeah, that guy asked a really good question. She obviously is a phenomenon, and she has rock star status, actually. There's a lot of people in this country who do dig her. She's sort of like a guru. I'm just wondering, who do you think her devotees are?
The question is who are her supporters? Who does she speak to? And you said she does have rock star status. It's true. I mean, everybody knows who she is. And you know, I think though it's a case where it's sort of cool is not the right word, but it's you know, everybody bought. Stephen Hawking's A Brief History of Time, and everyone read the first three pages and put it down forever. And I think, I hope, that that's the case with books like Godless and Slander. It's, you know, to be a devotee of Ann Coulter is sort of, it's a cool thing. So you buy the book, you get her on the bestseller list, and you leave it on your coffee table. Because, I mean, clearly anyone who read every word of Godless would know that she really is not saying anything, or she's certainly not speaking any truth. With a hat. Oh, sorry.
Sorry. Yep. Her motives. I mean, as you said, mm-hmm. She's not a dumb person. She's not really brainless.
Yeah.
Why is she lying? I assume she must know on some level that she's lying. Why?
Yeah. The question is, what are her motives, and why does she lie? And you know, when you sell 400,000 books every time out, that's pretty strong motivation right there. I think she really does. You know, somebody asked me the other day. They said, "Well, do you agree with anything that Ann Coulter says?" And I said, "Well, she directly contradicts herself almost all of the time. So by that measure, I agree with half of what she says." But no, and she, one of the contradictory statements, or two of them rather, is she will say, "Well, I only say these things to make my friends laugh," and then on the other hand, she'll say, "I believe everything I say." Now, I'm not a psychologist, nor do I play one on TV. But in the book, I talk a little bit about her motives and the psychology of Anne, and really how she matches what you might call narcissistic personality disorder. To watch a television appearance of her, she'll, as soon as somebody else is speaking, she flips her hair, she bats her eyelashes. You know, she was on, rather infamously recently, on Hannity and Combs, and she was begging Sean Hannity, "These people won't let me speak. I can't get a word in edgewise." And I just thought, you know, get over yourself. Or and I'll help you get over yourself again. Yeah.
The question is it really Ann Coulter, or is it the publicist? You can see when things are published, that's their job.
Right.
Okay, as an editor, when you look at a piece of material that is written, you know, the whole thing that 100 million pieces, whatever, that whole thing, brought up the case that a lot of publishers don't do their job.
Right.
It's really about publicity.
Yeah, the question is it really Ann Coulter, or is it the publicity machine behind her? And it's probably a little bit of both, but, you know, she's certainly the catalyst for it. And, you know, she met the right people with her first book, which was a far more scholarly endeavor.
As a writer, I mean, there are many, many books, okay, that are written, but because of 100 million pieces, you know, now it's, everything's under the guise of, you know, is it real? Is it fake?
Right. Well, it's funny because she told Jay Leno not that long ago that Godless, her most recent one, was her least edited book. And I thought, that is really not a claim you want to be making in the wake of a plagiarism scandal, incidentally. I get into that a little bit in the book as well. And there really are some similarities that you just bear scrutiny. So
I'm less interested in Ann Coulter than I am in Reuters.
Okay.
So if you plan any kind of action against your firing, is there anything contractual, and can you get any, because what's going on in the news world today, I'm a former journalist, is sort of outrageous, and Reuters is leading the list in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Is there any action you're planning to counter your firing?
Okay. The question is, am I going to plan any legal action, I assume, to counter my firing? Yeah. I'll be perfectly honest. I have spoken to a lawyer. Whether or not, you know, I'm not sure suing is the proper verb there, but let's just say that my lawyer wants to talk to theirs, and we'll go from there. Now, I'm under no illusion of getting my job back, nor at this point, frankly, would I want it. You know, and again, I do have some friends here from Reuters, but why would I want to work for a news organization that would fire me over an entirely personal endeavor after giving me approval to do so? That seems, you know, it seems a little gutless, frankly, and so I don't enjoy it. How about the guy in the hat there?
So, talk a little bit, if you will, Joe, about the media's role, the role of journalists, like yourself and others, in creating Ann Coulter. I mean, without journalists, you would not be on TV.
Yeah.
Does the book deal with that, and what's your view?
Yeah, the question, such as it was, is what was the media's role in the creation of Ann Coulter? And again, it was something I did struggle with. You know, writing a book with her name in the title really does risk feeding the beast, and the problems exist. Yes, we do tend to give people who shout on television and who flip their hair and make spectacles of themselves, we give them a little more airtime than they deserve because, you know, they make for good television. It's a problem that we have. You know, we would rather watch Fear Factor than C-SPAN. And look, I'm as guilty as the next person. But at some point, you'd kind of have to do switch over to C-SPAN or CNN or a news channel that doesn't start with F-O-X and learn something. And really, what I come from a family of devout newspaper readers. And, you know, if you really want to know what's going on, read the paper. Don't turn on Fox. Don't watch. Some of the Sunday morning shows are certainly enlightening enough and educational, but read the newspapers. That's what I encourage everybody to do. So,
what happened to you to Reuters? Is that something specific to Reuters, or is it something that could potentially happen in other news organizations?
The question is, could what happened to me at Reuters happen in other news organizations? I don't know that other organizations have such explicit so-called trust principles or code of conduct as Reuters does. And, you know, they're meant with the best intentions, really. You know, it's our job. It is the journalist's job to be objective and report things, report the truth. And so it's a very high-minded goal. I think it was, you know, perhaps misapplied here. But if you want to know if other news organizations would do it, take a look at Bob Woodward, and the Washington Post is more than happy to have the, you know, their name splashed all over that book. And again, I know I'm not Bob Woodward, but you know, neither am I Ann Coulter. So, how about right here? Two-part question. One, how do I get away with using her name in the title, for example? And have I heard from her or anyone on her side? She's a public figure, in short. So, and when you are, you sort of open yourself up to the criticism, the sort of criticism that comes from people like me. In fact, people ask me that question all the time because her picture is on the cover of the book, and it's a promotional photo that can actually be found on her website, despite the fact that I find it less than flattering, which is neither here nor there. But people ask me that all the time. Well, how did you get to use her picture? Surely, you know, she... And the fact is, I'm sure she loves it. I'm sure she loves to see her face on somebody else's book because it must make her think that she matters. More. Right here.
Do you expect, to compare this to Franken's book about O'Reilly, where O'Reilly was basically obsessive about it? Do you expect her to return that, or she hasn't been in touch with you, think she's going to ignore it? She's smart enough to pass?
Just as I am not Bob Woodward, I'm not Al Franken either, and Joe McGuire name certainly doesn't carry the same cachet yet. I'm sure she's pleased as punch to see her name on something, and I would love if she got on TV and ranted about me for hours and hours. I'm not averse to selling a book or two either, so I think it would be great. I think it would be a great thing. So, yeah, here. The question is, given that so many people follow her, what does that say about the political discourse in this country? And frankly, it has reached unfathomably low levels. Now look, again, this book is called Brainless, which is hardly a pat on the back. But the fact is, Ann Coulter is probably the leading offender when it comes to dragging down the political discourse in this country. It has devolved into mere name-calling, calling the 9/11 widows, and in particular the Jersey girls, harpies, doesn't add anything. That doesn't tell me, look, if they're politicizing their grief and you object to that, say it that way. Don't call them names. That doesn't add anything. And in fact, what it actually does is get in the way of whatever objective truth, whatever larger truth she might be trying to sell you. So it really, I think it's counterproductive. It sells books, yes, but it doesn't do anything for the discourse. Not in the back in the hat.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the question is, since I got canned, as you so kindly put it, Terry, thank you. How has that helped the media coverage and the media exposure? It's hard to say because I don't know what it would have been like before. And the HarperCollins publicist is certainly working overtime to get me on radio shows and the like. So. It's a hypothetical question, but I can't imagine that it hurt. And again, you know, to get on a blog like Crooks and Liars and then just to watch what happens when you do is pretty amazing. So it's been kind of fun and sort of taken my mind off the fact that I ironed a shirt for the first time in 3 weeks, 2 weeks, whatever it's been. So yeah, it's helped for sure. Yeah.
Can I say something? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I am, Lynn, just so you know, I'm trying to grow my hair really long and learn how to flip it around, so maybe I'll get a little more, TV. Yeah.
Really smart people listen to radio and online, right? And I think,
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be an honor to be on.
No, 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 and no, no, and I'm sure Lynn was not being dismissive, but it's, you know, 5,000 listeners in Rochester, you know, is different than the Today Show. I think there's no question about that. And you know, the Today Show is not knocking down my door. They've had her on, although perversely, she did say that no conservative author would ever appear on the Today Show in her book Slander. And then, of course, she was. She also claimed that no conservative author would ever be on Conan. And then she was actually on the more highly rated Leno show. She said that no conservative author would ever have a polite review in the New York Times. And while the New York Times was anything but polite to her, they did do an article about her book. So I mean, these are the sorts of contradictions that I had to deal with. And she really can be a sort of a media juggernaut, you know, unto herself. So it is a little frustrating to deal with that, but you know, baby steps, and then we'll get there. So.
Just in terms of Reuters, if you had written this decimal,
yeah.
Do you think it would cause the same? Did they consider her pornographic in a way?
The question is, if would Reuters have fired me if I had written a sex novel? I did actually, but it's under another name. No, I don't know the question in that. Oddly enough, I mean, a number of people at Reuters have written books, of course. It's what journalists do. You write. Some of them about investing. And if that is not a conflict of interest and a violation of the code of conduct and trust principles, I'm not quite sure how mine is. But, you know, somebody somewhere took a disliking to it, and the next thing you know, it was over.
I have two things. One, keep going on the law, and then the permanent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the other thing is, aside from the book, as you said, where do you see yourself? Whether the companies, is this something that is difficult for you?
It's a two-part question. The first part is, would I consider going on, for example, Bill Maher's show and debating Ann Coulter? And I would do that in a heartbeat. I would sit next to Ann Coulter anywhere she wants to, anytime, and let her do her thing, and then after everything she says, say, I'm sorry, you're lying, and here's how. The second part of the question was, how might my firing from Reuters affect my looking for another job? And you know, maybe I'm naive, maybe I'm an optimist, but I would hope that it wouldn't. And the fact is, if I had written this book 2 years ago and then applied for a job at Reuters, I can't imagine how it would have disqualified me from getting that job. So I don't know. I mean, it remains to be seen. Again, perhaps I'm being naive here, but it really is. Financial journalism is a very small community, and I know a lot of people in it, having been in it for as long as I am have been. So it should be fun. Yeah.
I'm kind of curious. You said at the beginning that Reuters gave you a list of things that you were required to do mm-hmm. if you left Reuters, and you felt that you had followed that list. Would you mind telling us what the list was?
Yeah, I mean, I won't go through every point, but some of the things. The question is, what was on the list of conditions for approval for the book? One of them was that it would not be the outright political satire that I had initially mentioned to them. It's not in any way, shape, or form that. It is a journalistic exercise. Again, opinionated perhaps, but nonetheless journalism. The other one was that the other main one was that I didn't associate the Reuters name with it. And I was meticulous and vigilant in keeping the Reuters name away from it. And in fact, I mentioned that to someone in the meeting during my dismissal and said, if you wanted to keep the Reuters name away from this, you're really not going about it the right way. And he didn't really see the irony there. So, whether it reflects poorly on them, I think most of the journalists in this room would probably say yes. But maybe other people feel otherwise. I don't know. Again, I think they're more concerned with their image than the integrity of the work.
But did you argue at the time that you had followed all of the rules, and did they say, no, you haven't?
Yes, the question is, did I argue that I had followed the rules? And yes, I did. And was met either with outright disagreement or stony silence, at the end of which was the door. I did. I argued my case as best I can. I don't have a law degree or anything, but I like to pretend I do sometimes. And it just didn't work. So.
Okay, just two more questions. And Joseph, okay. They have to sign books for that.
Okay.
I'm curious whether the words First Amendment free speech.
The question is, did the words First Amendment or free speech come up during the conversations? And yes, I can assure you that they did. Again, if this is an entirely personal endeavor, and it was, and remains so, it's my right as a citizen, and again, I sort of think of it as my civic duty to dispute Ann Coulter. And but again, they saw it differently. So, back right here. The question is, why is there any discussion of why she doesn't debate some of the top people on the other side of the political divide? I think it's fairly apparent that she would yes, thank you. That lose is the word that someone just shouted. Yeah, and frankly, she would. If some jokester like me can refute her, clearly someone with a lot more brains can. So. The question is her book considered fiction?
Because there are people that read books that it's facts, but not really writing from a very
and she is incredibly sarcastic, but she, I'm quite sure that she's writing these in earnest.
Joe's gonna be in the back signing books, so you can also ask some questions. And we all know Joe will be in a lot of other places appearing, and we'll let you know when we find out. So thank you again, Joe.